Chapter 3. Librarium Segrestia, Arx Angelicum, Baal. Bells rang out in the orbicular tower, summoning a tide of crook-backed wraiths. They boiled from the shadows, pale, emaciated serfs, skittering, spider-leg savants, and hooded, tube-limbed scribes, all chanting and typing as they ran, pounding at ceramic keys with metal-hinged fingers, and singing hymns through oily, riveted throats. As they flooded the tower's cloistered walkways, they filled them with a storm of parchment and plainsong, dizzy with ecstasy and fear. As the multitude grew larger, it grew more frantic and confused. Robed figures in a variety of shapes were soon milling around the statue-lined halls of the librarium. Human bondsmen argued furiously over the exact meaning of the alarm, while blank-eyed servo-scribes spewed reams of data at them, grinding out perforated sheets with clanking, crank-handled forelimbs. Just as the frenzied scene seemed on the verge of outright violence, a giant in night-blue armour walked into the centre of the tumult, towering over the mob in his gleaming battle-plate. Lucius Antros carried an ornate staff as tall as he was, and he announced his presence by cracking it several times on the flagstones. The serfs ceased their arguing and stepped back to create a path, panting and wide-eyed as they let the librarian by. Even the servitors ceased their mechanized din, wheeling and clattering away as Antros stepped up into an iron pulpit and looked down at the sea of upturned faces. Even amongst this strange assembly, he was a striking individual. He wore no helmet, and his face bore all the hallmarks of a blood angel. Chiseled, noble, and inhumanly beautiful, framed by a shoulder-length mane of blonde hair. His looks alone would have made him an impressive sight, and yet it was not the most arresting thing about him. Antros's perfect features were marked by a fierce craving. Hunger burned in his flawless blue eyes. Antros was irritated by what he saw. A mania, coiling through the minds of even his most experienced blood thralls, and an absurd undercurrent of panic. He allowed his consciousness to sneak through the crowd, plucking at the thoughts of his servants, peering into their blinkered little souls. Their daily routine of study had been interrupted, and that was enough to drive them into a frenzy. Since his return from Thermia V, he had felt buried alive in these halls, crushed under a mountain of timid bureaucrats and myopic scriveners. He had barely slept since the death of Lieutenant Myos, troubled by images of the slaughter at the pit, and waiting with mixed emotions for a summons from Mephiston. He had no doubt who would be responsible for stirring up this current nonsense. The chief pedant herself.
"Scholius Gore," he asked, his voice strong and resonant. "Are you there?"
There was a scuffle at the far end of the hall, as a woman strolled through the crowds. She was dressed in scarlet robes, embroidered with golden runes, and, in her own way, Demetra Gore was just as striking as Lexicanium Antros. She was so tall and wasted that her robe seemed to hang from her skull-like shaven head. Only the knife-blade tips of her shoulders gave any hint of the brittle, keen-edged body beneath. Her features were angular and androgynous, and her skin was papery and translucent, revealing the pulsing veins beneath. She embodied everything Antros found oppressive about his subordinates. Demetra was as dusty and dry as an old page. She climbed the pulpit with careful, unhurried steps, like a mantis edging towards its prey.
"Are you responsible for this?"
he asked, nodding at the speakers blaring overhead. The distorted, amplified sound of the bells was still ringing out through the librarium. Though unusually tall for a mortal, Demetra looked like a child beside the librarian, dwarfed by his transhuman bulk.
"Yes, Lexicanium," she replied,
keeping her gaze respectfully locked on the floor. She spoke through tight lips, her face rigid. Her large, wide-spaced eyes added to the strangeness of her appearance, the irises so dark that she seemed to only have pupils. Antros could feel the servants of the Orbicular Tower concentrating on the exchange, even if their eyes were fixed on their feet, and he sensed that their loyalties were still with Gore, rather than their new lord. He had little interest in the convoluted hierarchies and protocols of blood thralls, but such disrespect could not be tolerated. "Then I overestimated you," he said. "Even the most junior rubricator can memorize the rites of convocation. What is this nonsense you're broadcasting?" Demetra glanced up at him, her eyes like disks of flint.
"The auguries were quite clear."
"The auguries were quite clear, Lexicanium," he growled.
"Forgive me, my lord," she said, her voice taut. "The signs were quite clear, Lexicanium. There is a psychic rift in the Ostensorio. The warning comes from the highest authority, from Lord Rasselas himself. We are to seal the gates and ensure that no one leaves or enters the tower."
Antros shook his head in disbelief at the mention of the chief librarian's equerry.
"Rasselas? What are you talking about? A psychic rift inside the Arx Angelicum? Inside the librarium?
Show me what you have." Demetra slowly drew out a bundle of thin vellum strips, stuck together by carefully applied wax seals. Her hairless scalp was haloed by a forest of brass-rimmed lenses, dozens of them, all different sizes and shapes, and fixed to a metal crest. They moved as she examined the documents, with infuriating care, focusing on each page in turn, and flicking through them with her long, tapered fingers. She held one of them up and used another of her lenses, a mechanized lorgnette, to examine it. The frame of the eyeglass whirred and clicked as it dropped in front of her face and focused on the vellum. Then she nodded and handed it to Antros.
"It appears that there is a blood rite in progress that has not gone according to Lord Rasselas's prognostications."
He shook his head.
"Only the most senior librarians are permitted to enter the Ostensorio. Nothing could have gone wrong with Lord Rasselas present."
He looked closer at the text, and his augmented irises swam with glyphs and runes. He was sure that she was misreading the signs. Only the most powerful brothers of the Librarius would perform invocations in the Ostensorio. The suggestion that they might lose control was absurd. Then another thought occurred to him. However ridiculous this summons might be, it gave him an excuse to break from his tiresome duties in the Orbicular Tower, and perhaps even to hear news of Mephiston. He shoved the papers into a pouch, strapped to his leg armour, and turned to face the crowd. "I will make a brief visit to the Ostensorio. Return to your scriptoria and continue your work." None of the serfs dared to look up, but he felt the relief in their minds. The scribes hated any interruption to their work, and they rarely left the Orbicular Tower. There was an explosion of rustling noises as the serfs and servitors began clearing the hall. Antros strode off across the flagstones, passing quickly through the scriptoria, calefactories, and libraries of the Orbicular Tower, then out through the eastern gate into the wider librarium. He crossed the soaring bridge known as the Spear of Sanguinius and marched on through the countless writing rooms, sacrariums, and reliquaries of the Segrestia, accompanied all the while by the harsh clanging of the amplified bells. Then he entered the oldest quarters of the librarium, dark, narrow walkways lined with crumbling winged statues that formed tunnels with their overlapping swords. Blood thralls from other quarters of the librarium were rushing in the same direction, and Antros saw the same ridiculously frantic expressions on their faces. He had never felt such a mood in the librarium before. Antros's own mood grew darker as he saw a priest of the Adeptus Ministorum loitering in the shadows beneath one of the statues. He grunted in disapproval. Over the last few months, Baal had been invaded by wide-eyed pilgrims from the Cronian sector. Even by the standards of the Ministorum, they struck Antros as an odd bunch. Their white and gold robes were not so unusual, but they also had white lead painted on their faces and rouge smeared around their eyes, which made them look either sinister or absurd, depending on the light. These white-faced fanatics carried banners emblazoned with a winged angelic figure, and Antros had heard it rumoured that both the banners and the face paint were meant as some kind of tribute to Mephiston. If this were true, it was an affront to the dignity of the chief librarian. But the chapter council had taken the surprising step of allowing a small group of pilgrims access to the librarium. He had never heard of such a thing happening before, but it was said that Mephiston himself had given the order. The zealot beneath the statue showed little understanding of the great honour that Mephiston had bestowed on him. He was wailing and praying in the most undignified manner, pleading for a glimpse of the chief librarian. Mephiston was not, of course, to be found idling in the librarium, and Antros doubted the pilgrim would recognise his idol, even if he walked past him. Finally, Antros arrived at the north gate of the Ostensorio. He came to a halt and smiled at the sight of the vast doors. They were a marvel. Crimson slabs of barlight rock, hundreds of feet tall, and covered with glittering, blood-drop stones from the Craw Mountains. The red stone had been carved with images, portraying the early life of Sanguinius and his meeting with the god emperor. His smile faded as he saw battle brothers of the fourth company gathered at the foot of the steps before the huge gates. Two squads of tactical marines in full battle plate. These giants towered over the blood thralls, who were dashing between the buildings, and however nonchalantly they cradled their beautifully inscribed bolters, there was no disguising the threat of death that poured from behind their featureless visors. Antros strode up to the captain in charge, the only warrior in the line with his face visible, his helmet mag-clamped to his thigh. The officer's stern features were almost indistinguishable from those of the heroes chiselled into the crimson gates behind him. He was as inhumanly perfect as Antros, and also carried himself with the confidence of a veteran, the confidence Antros could imitate, but not yet feel. The captain's only trace of mortality was a thick, rigid scar that began at the right-hand corner of his mouth and crossed diagonally up to his left cheek. Antros climbed the steps and saluted. "Captain Vitrinus," he said. The captain nodded in recognition and returned the salute.
"Lexicanium, Antros," rumbled the other space marine.
Even without the amplification of his helmet, the captain's voice resonated like a tolling bell. They had met during the cleansing of Thermia V, but Vitrinus made no mention of the campaign.
"I received strange news in the Orbicular Tower," said Antros. He was unsure if he would be able to talk his way inside, but had decided to try. "The auguries implied that Epistolary Racilus needs my help."
The captain raised an eyebrow.
"If my masters are assembled here," said Antros, "Lord Racilus should know that I am..."
The captain raised a hand to silence him, as though he were the lowliest of menials, and Antros had to bite back an angry retort. Captain Vitrinus looked into the middle distance, and Antros heard the crackle of a vox message relayed through a bead in his ear. The captain was clearly surprised by whatever data he was receiving.
"Yes," he said. "The Lexicanium from the Orbicular Tower, Lucius Antros. He has learned of the situation."
There was another crackle of vox chatter, and Vitrinus nodded again.
"Standing right in front of me," he nodded.
"Very well."
After a moment's hesitation, he stepped aside and waved Antros on with his bolter. Then he grabbed him by the arm.
"Take care, brother,"
he said, looking warily at the Ostensorio.
"If I were you, I'd wait in the Auron Chapel and keep your head down."
He grimaced with distaste.
"From what I hear, Lord Racilus is involved in something unusual."
Antros was not surprised by the captain's tone. There were few in the chapter who weren't unnerved by the mysteries of the Librarius. Antros nodded and stepped forwards. Up ahead of him, another battle brother of the fourth company opened a door at the foot of the gates. This opening was a less imposing aperture, only 20 feet or so tall. It was decorated just as lavishly as the main gates, but Antros did not pause to study it, hurrying on into the Ostensorio, as the door slammed behind him. Several members of the Librarius were gathered inside the darkened chamber, codiciers and epistolaries all dressed for battle in massive suits of polished blue ceramite.
Antros had never seen so many of his brothers in one place. The air was charged with blood magic, and he sensed immediately that a grand ritual was in progress. Dead-eyed cherubs lit the scene, drifting beneath the barrel vaults on flashing golden wings. Thuribles trailed from their fingers, glinting in the candlelight and trailing a fine crimson mist. Scrolls of parchment fluttered beneath their fat little legs, and the air was thick with incense-heavy smoke that almost, but not quite, masked the iron-rich abattoir stink of the chamber. Antros reached the chapel and climbed its steps for a better view of the proceedings. On the far side of the chamber was a huge shimmering hololith, a projection of a ministerium priest sitting on an ornate ceremonial throne. His face was painted white, like all the other pilgrims that had come to Baal, and he looked like an enormous ghost, towering over the scene as the projection flickered in and out of view, broken up by crackling bursts of interference. Even through the red mist that filled the chamber, Antros could see that he was a senior prelate of the Adeptus Ministerium. His chasuble was embroidered with beautiful images of the golden throne, and his plump frame was draped in religious baubles. The hololith was 40 or so feet tall, and the priest's face was quivering with anticipation as he fidgeted and shifted in his chair, staring intently at the librarians. Gathered around the feet of this spectral throne was a group of cowled pilgrims, their faces hidden in their deep hoods, and their hands clasped in prayer. Antros could feel the religious fervour burning in their chests. They believed they were about to witness a miracle they had long prayed for. The librarians were assembled in the centre of the hall, with their backs to the projection, standing at the top of a broad, circular dais. They were arranged around a golden monstrance, a tall, metal stand set on a wide marble base at the centre of the dais, and supporting a semicircular cradle of brass. With their heads bowed and their swords raised, it looked as though the librarians were worshipping a huge metal chalice. Antros had never before been admitted to the ostensorio. It was a sight of great mystery to him, reserved for only the most senior members of his order. On any other occasion, he would have paused to marvel at the beauty of the monstrance. It was a masterpiece of devotional craft, dozens of feet wide and filigreed with elegiac scenes of angelic war hosts. But he was not looking at the ancient relic. Hovering above it, spitting and steaming, was a sphere of boiling blood. Antros was so surprised by the huge crimson ball that he let the tip of his staff clatter against the steps. The sound of metal hitting stone rang out through the gloom. Some of the priests glanced in his direction, but the librarians paid him no heed. Their eyes were firmly closed, and their raised weapons were linked to the sphere by cords of red fire, flicking back and forth and painting ghostly images in the dark. The strands of blood magic coruscated and coiled, feeding the inferno above the monstrance. Since entering the ostensorio, Antros had felt psychic energy tugging at his consciousness, pulsing through his veins and echoing round his skull, like a sinister hymn. He realized that the etheric power was emanating from the red sphere. As it blazed brighter, it filled his mind with an inhuman, looping howl, the pitiless song of the warp.
"Lexicanium!"
cried one of the librarians, turning briefly away from the monstrance to look at him. His face was glistening with sweat, and the lights made it look like he was drenched in blood. His features were contorted with pain and concentration, and it took Antros a moment to recall that his name was Pelorus.
"Stand by me!"
gasped Pelorus, trembling.
"Be ready! We're losing him!"
Antros rushed to his brother's side, his pulse racing at the thought of joining in such a powerful invocation. As he neared the dais, he saw that there was a shape forming in the centre of the sphere. He peered closer, fascinated. Something was alive in the blood, something wreathed in fire. "Losing who?" he whispered, but Pelorus did not reply. The librarians around him were straining in agonized silence as the sphere grew larger, their eyes clamped shut as they channeled furious gouts of psychic flame through their swords. They resembled riggers working at a storm-lashed sail, shaking and scowling as elemental power tore through them. Antros could feel the carrion chill of bloodcraft washing over his face, and the behaviour of the guards outside began to make sense. This ritual was not going to plan. That much was clear from the circle of grim faces flickering in and out of view as the cherubs whirled overhead. The ghostly colossus on the far side of the chamber leant forwards in his chair, his eyes straining wider.
"Concentrate!" said Pelorus, glancing at him. "Be ready!"
Needles of red energy began spraying from Pelorus's power armor, flickering across the clouds of scented smoke. Antros felt the force of it shivering along the length of his staff. The noise grew louder, and the flagstones answered in kind, groaning and creaking beneath the hunch librarian. Then the whole room started to judder, as if in the grip of a quake. There was a harsh cracking sound, as though the air itself had snapped, and Pelorus was lifted off his feet and hurled away from the monstrance like a child's toy. His massive, armor-clad form clattered across the flagstones, trailing smoke as he crashed into the base of a pillar. He cried out in rage and frustration as the cord of magic he had been channeling lurched free, a wild serpent lashing back and forth.
"Pelorus!"
bellowed another one of the librarians on the far side of the circle. Even in the shifting light, Antros recognized him. Epistolary Racilus was Mephiston's equerry and one of the longest-serving veterans in the entire chapter. Racilus had been responsible for much of Antros's training, and his contemptuous glare still haunted his dreams. The psychic hood of Racilus's power armor was ablaze with warp fire, and, as he climbed to his feet, his whole body shook under the strain. Sparks were crackling around his eyes and gums, spitting and flashing as they danced over his face. But he drew back his shoulders and kept his force sword aloft, holding up the column of energy he was channeling.
"Lexicanium Antros," he said calmly, as though he were merely ordering a servant to fetch him a drink. "Close ranks."
Despite his exertions, he managed to give Antros a warning glance.
"Do not let me down, neophyte."
Despite his raging heart, Antros stepped calmly into the circle, catching the loose arc of crimson on the head of his staff. The impact rocked him back on his heels, but he held his place, clutching the staff in both hands, as it quivered and sparked. Pain washed over his flesh, as though he had been set alight, but the agony was dwarfed by the torrent of visions that exploded in his head. Another world superimposed itself over the ostensorio. Vast sheets of flame thundered past beneath him as powerful wings hurled him through the air. The vision was wonderful and overwhelming. It took every ounce of his training to anchor his thoughts.
"What is this?"
he cried, his voice contorted by pain. He sensed a being of incredible power forming above the huge chalice.
"What are we summoning?"
Racilus was unwilling or unable to reply. He merely twisted his lip into an even more disdainful curl. Antros tried to decipher the shape in the blood. It was still too vague to make out, so he switched his gaze to his brother librarians. As the light of the sphere swelled and enveloped them, the librarians' noble features began to change, growing feral and furious. They howled in outrage, and Antros joined his voice to theirs as he felt the cause of their anger. Whatever Racilus had intended to invoke, they were now facing something horrific. The warp itself was straining to breach the sanctity of their fortress monastery. Incredibly, something was trying to enter the librarium. Antros found it hard to breathe, suffocated by a potent mixture of outrage and excitement. The visions threatened to overwhelm him again. But then he sensed a presence beside him and turned to see Lexicanium Pelorus. Pelorus was barely able to stand. His power armor had been rent open by the psychic blast he had taken, and his mouth was full of blood. He managed to nod at Antros.
"I'm ready," he said. "If you fall..."
"What are we?" began Antros.
No!
Said Epistolary Racilus, interrupting Antros as he sliced his sword down through the air. It connected with a brass circular channel embedded in the flagstones, creating a blinding shower of sparks. The other librarians followed suit, smashing their swords against the metal, severing the cords of power, and enveloping the dais with crimson light. For a second, the red sphere burned white, blinding everyone. Then the light vanished, leaving nothing. All the lights had vanished, not just the sphere, but the cords of magic too. Unbalanced, Antros staggered forwards, straining to discern shapes in the void. For a while there was nothing, just the laboured breathing of the unseen librarians and the thick, charnel stink. Then, as his eyes adjusted to the darkness, Antros saw a crouched, powerful shadow, just visible at the centre of the circle.
"I was sure the answer would be there,"
said a hushed voice, speaking directly into Antros's mind.
"But I found nothing."
Light seeped back into the chamber as Brazier sputtered back into life and the cherub's candles reignited, revealing the figure at the centre of the circle. Finally, Antros saw the being they had wrenched from the warp. Mephiston, chief librarian of the Blood Angels, master of the Librarius. The Lord of Death had returned.